From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. We're pleased to be back. Coming up, a top string quartet premieres new music by Nevada County classical composers, and singer, pianist, songwriter Rachel Wagner of Roseville packs up her husband and kids for a Pacific Northwest concert tour. First, these are difficult times for local governments. The recession and the state of California's fiscal problems are combining to force big budget cuts. But some of these cuts are to important or popular services. Today in Insight, we're going to check in with two very different local governments, a big county and a smaller county, and hear how they're handling program cuts. We start with social services of various kinds at Sacramento County. On the phone are two top county officials, Ann Edwards-Buckley, who's director of Sacramento County Mental Health Treatment Center, and Dr. Keith Andrews, who's division chief of primary care services agencies at the Sacramento County Department of Health and Human Services. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ann, let's start with you. What's happening to the budget for the Sacramento County Mental Health Treatment Center next fiscal year compared to this year?
We are making significant reductions in the Mental Health Treatment Center, which limits our ability to send patients to private facilities when we reach our maximum capacity in our county-operated treatment center.
Can you give us an idea of the scale of the cut?
Yes, we are cutting several million dollars from the treatment center, which equates to lots of contracts with private facilities in the community, such as Sierra Vista, Heritage Oaks, Sutter Center for Psychiatry. And we've made some of those reductions this year, and the community is already beginning to feel that impact.
How do you figure out how to prioritize where to make the cuts that you have to make in your part of the county government?
Well, we had to make the cuts based on where we had discretionary funds. Some funds are limited to certain functions only, and the dollars that we had to reduce came from realignment funds, which is sales tax, and vehicle license fees, and those are our most flexible dollars, and the bulk of those dollars are in our adult outpatient system and in the mental health treatment center, which is why we had to make significant reductions there.
Who is going to most feel the impact of these cuts?
I think the entire community is going to feel the impact of the cuts. Certainly the clients that we will no longer be able to serve will be the most impacted, as well as their family members. But the impact of the reductions to the treatment center certainly have a huge community impact, which we've already begun to see, because those patients end up at our local emergency rooms and other hospitals who don't have the clinical expertise to care for them.
What about the community at large? Are there any broader impacts on people who have no or don't expect to have any contact with Sacramento County Mental Health Treatment, but who may still, down the line, feel the impact of these cuts?
Well, you may see more individuals who suffer from a mental illness out in the community without access to medication services and without access to outpatient treatment. We may find more individuals who wind up being homeless. They may show up at our emergency rooms, which I already mentioned, and also the jail. Sometimes they get picked up because if they are not receiving treatment, sometimes their behavior can appear frightening or disturbing to others in the community. So we may see more of that.
That, of course, could conflict with other priorities in Sacramento County and in the city of Sacramento, motivated in part by all the international publicity of the so-called tent city in Sacramento. But there's a backdrop of a 10-year homelessness plan. How do the different departments of the county who are working with different parts of the community coordinate the impacts of the cuts they have to make?
Well, we coordinate very closely with the Department of Human Assistance, which operates many homeless service programs, and both departments are actively involved in the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. In mental health, we're fortunate that we do have Mental Health Services Act dollars, that is funds from Proposition 63, and one of the high priorities of use of those funds is for the homeless who suffer from mental illness. And so we will be able to continue to provide those services, although as more people drop off the other services, it will be difficult to treat them all.
Ann Edwards-Buckley of Sacramento County Mental Health Treatment Center. Also on the phone, Dr. Keith Andrews, Division Chief, Primary Care Services, Sacramento County Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Andrews, welcome.
Good morning.
Could you give us an idea of the scale of the difference in the budget that you administer this year compared to next year?
The main impact over the past year has been on the number of direct service providers and the number of clinics that we have available for the county medically indigent services population. Last year, we cut 54 FTEs, which represented $5.2 million. Mid-year this year, in February, we cut an additional 34 FTEs, full-time equivalent employees, representing $6 million, and we're anticipating cutting an additional 27 employees for budget year, fiscal year 09-10, which represents a cut of $2.5 million. What this means for the clients who access services is that we used to operate six clinics throughout Sacramento County, widely distributed geographically, and we will be left after July 1st with two clinics, one at Stockton and Broadway, fairly centrally located, and another in the South area.
How do you prioritize where the money, the reduced amount of money that you have available is going to go next year?
As Anne stated, we are obligated to meet certain legal mandates, and that is where we are focusing. Our main legal mandate is to provide a safety net of care for the county medically indigent services population. This is a group of about 56,000 persons who meet financial eligibility criteria to receive medical care through a safety net from the county. The scope of services is not clearly defined by the law. It's largely been determined through legal cases when counties have tried to scale back on services. In Sacramento County, it has been our goal to provide a community standard of care to this population, which is becoming more and more difficult as the number of clinics that we have becomes reduced.
Who are your clients typically?
Most of them are working poor. I would say approximately 75% are working in jobs where they don't have benefits or they're working part-time and so are not eligible to receive benefits. Approximately 20% are homeless persons and overlap greatly with the population that Anne was referring to of persons who have comorbid mental illness.
What about the community at large? What impact are they going to feel from these cuts, or might feel from these cuts? I'm talking about people who do not typically go to the county primary care facilities.
I believe the major impact to the community will be on overburdening the area emergency rooms, where people who would ordinarily receive preventative care or chronic disease management will have to seek care either when their condition deteriorates to the point that it becomes an emergency, or because they can't get into a county clinic, they will seek routine primary care at an emergency room.
Okay. And finally, for both of you, do you have budget people at Sacramento County who are warning you that as tough as the budget looks next fiscal year, that there's a possibility or a probability of revising it downwards and perhaps even projections further out? Let's start with Ann Edwards Buckley at Mental Health.
Yes, we are anticipating further reductions passed along to us from the state as they prepare for their budget. So we are anticipating further reductions.
So the reductions you talked about earlier did not take into account whatever will happen with the state?
That is correct.
And Dr. Andrews?
We have anticipated an additional several million dollars in cuts and have already prepared for that inevitability. So far, what we have done is maintained the number of clinicians, that's physicians and nurse practitioners, in order to try and continue to see the maximum number of patients daily. If we have to take additional cuts, I believe that we will begin to have to start taking away clinician positions and pharmacist positions, which will further impact our ability to deliver care.
Well, it sounds like, if I may say this, as tough as the decisions that you've had to make up until now, the decisions that are probably ahead are going to be even tougher.
That is correct. It will be very difficult because we are already, as Dr. Andrews stated and I mentioned as well, we are already making significant reductions that we do believe the community will feel the impact of, and with greater reductions coming, it is of concern.
Well, thank you both so much. Anne Edwards-Buckley, Director of Sacramento County Mental Health Treatment Center, and Dr. Keith Andrews, Division Chief Primary Care, Sacramento County Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to move a step closer to some of the clients who are served by Sacramento County, who will, of course, directly feel the impact of these cuts. In our studio, Joan Burke, Director of Advocacy at Loaves and Fishes, which works with homeless people and near homeless people in the Sacramento region. And on the phone, John Buck, who's CEO of Turning Point Community Programs. It's a nonprofit serving mental health clients in the greater Sacramento region, as well as Stanislaus and Merced counties. I welcome you both. Joan Burke, let's start with you. What kind of money does Loaves and Fishes get from Sacramento County, and to do what?
Loaves and Fishes gets no money from Sacramento County. We're entirely privately funded. Our budget is about $4 million a year, and that's from people in the community and foundations who want to help homeless people.
But your organization will presumably feel some impact if the county makes the cuts that it's talking about.
Absolutely. The people that we serve, the homeless, are going to be drastically affected. One of the proposals in the county budget that we're most concerned about is the elimination of 328 shelter beds. That's about 40% of the total amount of shelter beds is being eliminated just at the time when cutbacks in other areas are likely to increase the number, unfortunately, of people who become homeless.
Yes. We talked specifically about some cutbacks with Anne Edwards-Buckley and Dr. Keith Andrews. Could you give us an example or two of how the cuts that are happening, and bearing in mind there could be, there will be probably further cuts to be made, how those would affect homeless people?
Well, we know that somewhere between 30 and 50% of the homeless people who come to Loaves and Fishes have very significant mental illnesses, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. The mental health clinics in Sacramento County are taking thousands of people off their eligibility rolls. And unfortunately, many of those people without that medication and support will very likely be homeless and coming to Loaves and Fishes, but also coming to shelters that are going to have to turn them away now for lack of space.
And what about the primary care?
Again, many, many homeless people have very significant health difficulties. Diabetes is one of them. And if they're not getting treatment, they may end up unable to work. And then they lose their housing and, again, end up homeless.
Joan Burke at Loaves and Fishes. Now, John Buck, your organization, Turning Point Community Programs, does get money from Sacramento County. How important is that money?
Without the financial resources, we wouldn't be able to hire the psychiatrists, nurses, counselors who do the work.
Well, give us an idea of the amount of money you get from Sacramento County and how big a percentage of the budget it is.
Well, I think that we get about $12 million. Now, it's a combination of county dollars, both Mental Health Services Act dollars, what's called realignment, which comes from sales tax and vehicle license fees, and then when we produce service units, those are usually billed to Medi-Cal, and so we get Medi-Cal dollars. And those help sustain, in the case of our agency, about 7 different contracts with Sacramento County, 3 of which are with children and 4 of which are with adults.
When the next fiscal year starts, what do you see happening to the programs at Turning Point, and what impact will those cuts have on the people you serve, mental health clients?
With our children's contracts, we've essentially been told that we can no longer serve non-Medi-Cal working poor clients. With our adult contracts, the 2 biggest impacts, I'll give you the 3 biggest. We will be taking more people who are homeless with psychiatric disabilities or mental illness with no additional dollars but we'll simply stretch ourselves further. In a second contract, our integrated service agency, where we work with people who are primarily long-term institutionalized, they've had lots of time in lock settings, and so we support them in the community at much less cost than in a hospital, we're probably going to be reduced by well over $1 million and expected to provide pretty much the same level of service. And, you know, we'll give it our very best shot, but it means probably we won't be as effective or efficient. And then our third contract, which is the most severe, will be we operate one of the four regional support teams in Sacramento that you've heard about being cut. And there are four of them, all operated by nonprofits, which makes them we're much more efficient. And
What do the teams do?
We essentially provide support services to about 9,000 clients who have severe mental illness, and we provide medication supports. I would call it light case management because each person has a caseload of about 120, probably somewhere in that range. And so we help them to sort of stay the course and maintain whatever level of recovery they have, or try to help them ratchet up their recovery.
What's likely to happen? Go ahead.
I was going to say, and with only half the funding, or a little less than half the funding, we'll be telling them probably 4,500 to 5,000 people, sorry, no longer any specialty mental health services. You'll have to get some kind of generic services wherever you can get them in the community.
Where would they get such services?
Some may get it from their primary care physician, and I believe that County Mental Health will be giving them some support, offering some psychiatric support consultation. Some will get it from the primary care clinics, where they will simply stand in line with everybody else needing services, whether it's medical services or psychiatric. And probably, sadly, some won't be getting services because they'll just fall through the cracks.
You must have been a little anxious about what was going to happen in the special election last month. One of the measures would have temporarily diverted mental health money into the general fund of the state of California. The voters rejected that, so that money is staying where it is. But I guess it could have been a lot harder.
Probably would have been a much harder impact in future years, but it's bittersweet. That is, because none of the measures passed, with the exception of one that might limit some dollars for the legislators themselves, which is pretty minuscule, the state's got to go back now and find more money. And like as Ann Edwards-Buckley said a while ago, we're still looking at potential other cuts that'll have to be devised at the state level in order to balance their budget.
Finally, for both of you, I'm sure it's fair to say that there isn't a single office holder or agency administrator who takes any pleasure in making these cuts. It's a very challenging time for everyone. What would you say to the elected officials and the agency administrators who don't have the ability to raise any more money and they're dealing with reduced resources and they have to make cuts somewhere? Let's start with Joan Burke at Loaves and Fishes.
Well, I think, first of all, they are madly trying to shuffle funding to preserve the safety net, and we thank them for that. And I would urge them to prioritize taking care of the most vulnerable, women, children, and the disabled.
And John Buck?
Well, I can certainly echo what Joan just said. You're right on, Joan. Probably if I had any advice for over the next year, it's twofold. One is we have to reel in the costs of our local mental health treatment center. They've continued to escalate dramatically over the years. And probably attached to that is that we have to go back as a county, as a taxpayer, and relook at contracting out services as opposed to having employees with the public service unions do the work, because we just don't seem to be able to control both the legacy benefits and also the increases in those kinds of contracts. I know that'll make me very unpopular with some folks.
Yeah, I was wondering whether to pursue this further, but it seems like it's
Please
another
don't.
Topic. Well, not right now, but it sounds like an important topic, but we don't have the time for it right now, and it's not what we set out to discuss. So in the meantime, thank you both so much for joining us. Joan Barkin, our studio director of advocacy at Loaves and Fishes, and John Buck, CEO of Turning Point Community Programs, a nonprofit serving mental health clients. Loaves and Fishes, of course, works with homeless people. Thank you both so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Coming up, more on how local governments are handling program cuts. We'll hear how Placer County is handling cuts to its parks and recreation. We'll be right back. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Insight streams live online. Check it out at capradio.org/insight. Coming up in Talk of the Nation, California's budget crisis and what that might foretell for the other 49 states. Plus, issues raised by the world's first murder conviction for knowingly exposing someone to the AIDS virus. It happened in Canada. That's Talk of the Nation after Insight at 11 on Capital Public Radio. Today we're hearing how local governments are handling budget cuts to important and popular programs. Earlier we talked about social service programs in Sacramento County. In this part of the program, we'll check in with a smaller, more rural county and its parks. Joining me is Placer County's Parks Administrator, John Ramirez. John, welcome to Insight.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
What impact are the budget cuts and the general fiscal situation having on Placer County's Parks Department?
Well, so far we've been able to cope. We have had substantial reductions. Last year, our budget was cut by $526,000, so it's about a $4.5 million total budget, so that was definitely substantial. Primarily, we lost all of our vacant positions, so we had six positions that we did not fill, and that's primarily how we were able to cope last year.
What about the coming fiscal year?
The coming fiscal year, we're anticipating our base budget will be about what it is right now. We have made quite a few reductions to our maintenance service level. So as people go out to the county parks, they'll probably notice, especially in outlying areas, more weeds, the grass, much more stressed than it used to be because of our lowered maintenance practices. But we are tracking that very carefully, tying it closely to our budget so that we come in right where we are allocated to be. So future years, we should be probably about how we are now, unless there's some more drastic action taken by the state that would affect the county funding.
That's what I was just about to ask you. Are you anticipating further cuts when the state of California resolves, which it hopefully will do, resolves its enormous fiscal problems?
Well, we're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, so to speak. But on the positive side in Placer County, our Board of Supervisors and our Planning Commission and our County Executive have historically placed a really high importance on parks, trails, open space, and our beaches. And what that means is that as they've cut back countywide, they've considered us an essential service, and that's a good thing. We are discretionary, and one of the areas they could cut really hard if they felt that way. But again, they've recognized that it's an important quality of life issue to provide good, safe parks for their communities. So again, we've cut back about everywhere we can. If drastic cuts come, then pretty much everything will have to be put out on the table, and we'll have to see how we could cope at that time. We don't know how bad that would be, obviously, at this point.
Placer County operates a lot of local and community parks and trails, but you also have a big new regional park, Hidden Falls, near Auburn. I visited it. It's a spectacular place. It's almost like a small state park. How are you maintaining that, which I'm assuming is the jewel of the system? How are you maintaining that when you've had to cut your budget so much?
Excellent question. It is the crown jewel of our park system. Extremely popular site. It's about 220 acres. And if anybody would like to go out there, we do have a website, and you can just look up Hidden Falls Regional Park. That park is was funded through what the county calls its Placer Legacy Program. So it is a general fund funded park. We provide minimal maintenance to the site. We keep the restrooms clean, inspect the trails, pick up some litter that's out there. What we have found on the very positive side is that the community loves the site so much, they go out there quite a bit and they volunteer a lot. They voluntarily cut back the brush from the trails. We had a work day last weekend, and we had over 100 volunteers show up from several different organizations and just other people that saw our announcement for a volunteer work day at the park. And I was out there with them. I happened to be out there for half a day, and they got a lot of work done. And a lot of what they did out there, you know, people could say, well, that's maintenance. The county should be doing it. But what the people were telling me, hey, we're out here because we recognize there's a crisis, and you guys aren't able to do a lot. So they were pruning. They were cutting back blackberries, poison oak. Again, if you go out there, you'll see what a wonderful, beautiful park it is. And a lot of that is just because of the active community that we have, and the fact that people are recognizing that if they don't step up and help, it definitely is not going to be as beautiful as it is now.
John, if the state of California's budget problem is resolved in part on county budgets, and you're told to cut another half a million out of a several million dollar budget, how would you decide where to cut the money while minimizing the impact on your clients, the people of Placer County?
Right. We have in the county several advisory bodies. They're called municipal advisory councils, and we work with them on a monthly basis. They represent their local communities. We would have to propose certain actions from our end and get their feedback, not necessarily their buy-in. We'd like to get that, but we won't always do that, especially when parks are so popular in their community. We'd consider factors like how high is the use, what type of funding do we have. We do have a lot of funding that's not general fund. Some of it is mixed in with general fund dollars. So how much do we have in an area that we can fund from other sources, other resources such as assessment districts that we have in place. Lake Tahoe, we have 12 beaches around there. They're all funded by transient occupancy tax, which is a hotel tax that's up there because there's so much tourism up there. So, again, those parks would, depending on how many people continue to recreate in Tahoe, those parks should be pretty immune to future cuts. But our general fund-funded parks would definitely receive some drastic cutbacks. What those are specifically, we'd have to work through them once we knew how much we had to cut in the future.
John Ramirez, Placer County Parks Administrator. John, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Coming up, singer, pianist, songwriter Rachel Wagner of Roseville packs up her husband and kids for a Pacific Northwest concert tour. We'll be right back. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Listen to Insight at your convenience. Sign up for our podcast at capradio.org/insight. For years, Rachel Wagner focused her energies on raising her kids, but in quiet moments, she wrote songs. Then she got to the point where she felt she needed to do more with her music, and so recorded an album in her home, and then a second. This month, Rachel, her husband, and their kids are heading for the Pacific Northwest to give a series of concerts. Here's an example of Rachel Wagner's music. It's the song Through the Darkness.
The sun, it surprised me today. I'm not sure what to do with this display. 'Cause after all,
Rachel Wagner, welcome to Insight.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How many songs did you write in all those years?
Oh, a lot. I mean, the ones that got on the CD are a sampling, but there was a lot of songs, yeah.
And how much did the other people in your life know about the songs you were writing?
How much did they know about them? Well, at the beginning, it was just kind of something I was doing to get through and, you know, express what I was feeling about life and raising kids and just everything that was going on. And then there's a circle of family and friends who, you know, knew about it. And not too many, but
In the liner notes of your first album, Everyday Things, you wrote about how one evening you sat down with your husband, John, and John's with us too. John, welcome.
Thanks.
Tell us about that conversation with Rachel when she, as far as I can tell, said, I've got to do something with all this music.
Well, I think that what was going on at the time were that was that our kids were little, and each night Rachel would go to the piano and she would play songs, and oftentimes they were new songs that she had written during the day or at other times, and it was something that our family went to sleep to, and or at least the kids, and it was something that we needed to share. And so I think before we really got too far into it, we had a house concert at our home, and we invited some guests, and a lot of people came, and that's turned into a couple of additional house concerts. And from that, we thought we need to go somewhere else with this. So.
And so you recorded the first album in a part of your kids' playroom at home.
That's right. Yeah. A lot of it was, you know, we would get the instrument tracks down, and then I'd have a few minutes while the kids were playing outside, and I'd run upstairs and try to do a vocal. And a lot of it was just kind of mishmash together on that first one, especially.
Well, let's listen to a song from that album. The first album is called Everyday Things, and this song is Driving Away.
Driving away, wishing that I'd been more gracious. Driving away, wishing that I'd been more kind. Wondering why my words won't flow across.
Well, that song's about a situation a lot of us can relate to, where we're leaving a conversation going, dang, why did I say that?
Yes.
Was this an actual conversation that inspired it?
Yeah, I think so. Although I have these conversations every day, multiple times a day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was of a specific one. I came home and just started writing, and that's what came out. So that one came pretty quick.
Tell us about this tour you're going on in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, we are headed up to Portland is our first show, and then we're going up through Washington and Idaho and Montana and playing at a few cafes, a few pubs. I think there's one or two house concerts in there. And all the kids are coming.
And including Amy.
Including Amy. Yeah.
Are you looking forward to the tour?
Yes.
What's your role? What are you going to be doing? Do you know?
I'm going to be manning the merchandise table.
Oh, so meaning what? You'll be selling CDs?
I'll be selling the CDs and answering questions.
Oh, like what kind of questions can you answer?
Like which CD is better?
Ah, well, which CD do you like better?
I like the second CD.
And why do you like it better?
Because my mom and dad actually knew what they were doing during the second CD, so.
Okay, well, John, what do you all know better for the second CD?
I think at the conclusion of the first one, well, we just realized pretty early on that we were lost and we needed people to help us. And so by the time we got to the second one, we were fully aware of that need. And so we sought people that we don't have very much money, so it was just whoever could help us that were kind of in our community. And
Rachel, tell us about your co-producer.
Odome, yes, that's his stage name. Otherwise known as Josh Graham. He is an amazing musician, guitarist, producer, and we feel very privileged to have him work with us. He added a lot.
To both CDs?
To both CDs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
My guest is Rachel Wagner, the singer, pianist, songwriter. She, her husband, and three children are about to go on a short tour of the Pacific Northwest playing her songs. She's released two albums. The most recent, When We're There, I'll Let You Know. And the first, Everyday Things. The family lives in Roseville. Let's listen to another song from the second album. This one is called This Part of Town.
Look at the moon, look at the sky. Look at all these good plans gone awry. Look at the light reflect in my eyes. I'm closing them now. 'Cause all of this here is not what it seems. It never quite measures up.
Rachel, most of your songs feature the piano prominently. This one has an acoustic guitar. Did you write the song on acoustic guitar?
I didn't. I wrote it on piano, and Josh, or Odome, took it, and I just said, have free reign and do what you want with this song, and that's what he came up with, and we were really pleased with it.
Yeah.
Very creative.
Amy, you said earlier the second album's your favorite. What's your favorite song on the second album? And maybe we've played it.
Through the Darkness. Oh, that was, yeah. It was fun when they rehearsed it.
Oh, yeah? What was so fun about it?
I got to stay up late and watch them rehearse it, and like everyone was laughing, and it was really fun.
Rachel, how long did it take to record that song?
Through the Darkness? Well, it came...
Including the rehearsal and... So
oh, goodness. Including the rehearsals and everything, you know, a few hours. But we moved pretty well through the whole thing, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's listen to another song and then a remixed version of it from the first album, Everyday Things. The song is Knots. So what we're going to do, if we can, is listen to the real Rachel version of it, and then the remix version that your co-producer Odame did of it. So let's start with the Rachel version, Knots.
See you.
I love that. I really love the original song, but that dub techno mix that Odame did of it is just outstanding as well.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, that's one of the kids' favorites. They always want to go to that song first when we listen.
So are you one of the ones who likes that, Amy?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it? Rachel, I want to ask you about the words of one of your songs in the first album, Everyday Things. It's mm-hmm. called On the Line, and... says that the words start, you call me just to say hi and I love you and I'm desperate to keep you on the line. Oh, please don't say goodbye. Amy saw the bushes growing and I broke a dish this morning. It sounds like something that a lot of moms at home could probably identify with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I wrote that song the same morning Amy ran in. She was little then. And he said, Mommy, I saw the bushes growing outside. And I thought that was silly. And so that made its way into the song. And yeah, sometimes John is the only adult contact I have during the day, especially when the kids were little. So,
well, John, you're the you in that lyric. Mm-hmm. What's it like for you to hear that song?
I love it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel bad because I might get off the phone too quickly, though.
And Amy, do you remember that conversation when you said you saw the bushes growing?
No. I don't know what she's talking about.
Okay. Well, maybe some other Amy. Who knows? Well, when do you leave, Rachel?
We leave Thursday. John gets off work around 5, and we're going to head out Thursday night and start driving. So.
Yeah, going to be a lot of driving, but it sounds like a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining us, sharing your music, and good luck with the tour. Rachel Wagner, singer, pianist, songwriter, with her husband, John Wagner. One of their kids, Amy, also with us, and they're all going off on a short Pacific Northwest tour. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Coming up, a top string quartet premieres new music by Nevada County classical composers Wilbur Wrightbank. Listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. You can download previous editions of Insight. Find our archives at capradio.org/insight. Nevada County is home to many classical music composers. So many, they have their own group, the Nevada County Composers Cooperative. Each year, they hold a concert of music by their members. It's called Wet Ink. This year, an internationally renowned ensemble is on the bill, performing works by local composers. We'll talk with a member of that group, the Del Sol String Quartet, in a couple of minutes. But first, Mark Vance, Jerry Grant, composers and members of the Nevada County Composers Cooperative. Welcome.
Thank
nice
you.
Nice to be here,
Thank
Jeff.
You. Now, both of you have pieces, new pieces that are being performed at the concert, right?
Yes. Very exciting.
And these are our premieres, so we don't have recordings of the Del Sol String Quartet playing it, but we do have versions, stripped-down versions, I guess, played by computer.
A sample realization.
Yeah. So bearing in mind that we're going to listen to computer here and not an actual string quartet, let's start with you, Jerry Grant. What's your piece?
It's called Polarities for Four Strings. And it is one movement, about 8 minutes long, and has fast and slow. Polarities refers to love, hate, marriage, divorce.
Okay, well, let's listen to a bit of it. Jerry, sounds kind of menacing.
That part of it that rather part. Is, yeah. Actually, because of the fact that I love to think in images, and this is really an image of that I had when I wrote the piece, and this is really the argument. The argument stages of when a marriage goes bad.
Jerry, in your career, you've worked in a lot of genres, including film, and there is a film quality to that music, if I may say.
I think there always is. You know, there always is. I will say, when I was 13 years old, I watched a film, and I thought to myself, I want to do that. I don't know why, but I eventually did, yes. So I've come through jazz and classical and film music and symphonic, and so it all comes together.
Mark, what's your piece called?
This is the second movement of my string quartet. The string quartet's called Between Midnight and Dawn, and the whole idea behind this is a five-movement work that really explores that sort of extraordinary time between midnight and dawn that we many times sleep through, but it can facilitate a lot of different things. Yeah. And this particular movement is, it's the end of the second movement. It's very poignant, it's very slow, introspective, reflective.
From Between Midnight and Dawn, composed by Mark Vance, who's in our studio, and a reminder, both the samples we've heard of these new pieces of music were played on a computer. They're going to be played by an actual string quartet at the Wet Ink Concert this Wednesday evening at 7:30 in the Nevada County Fairgrounds. Mark, did you personally stay up very late at night to inspire you, to put you in the right direction?
I think composition is one of those things, especially in the early years where I was raising a family and working full time and trying to write music. That's when that sort of happens, is that you spend your whole day working, you come home, you have dinner with the family, you make sure the homework is done and everything is finished and the dishes are done, the kids go to bed, and then it's your turn to actually do what you want to. Now I'm writing professionally at this point, and so I have the luxury of writing during the daytime, but just sort of exploring the creative aspect, the romantic aspect, of course, of nighttime, and all those different things.
My guests are the Nevada County composers Mark Vance and Jerry Grant. On the phone is Charlton Lee, violist in the Del Sol String Quartet, which is playing at the Wet Ink Concert. He's also the quartet's founder. Charlton Lee, welcome to Insight.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
What's your reaction to the pieces of music that Mark Vance and Jerry Grant composed and that Del Sol will play?
Oh, well, I thought, you know, just listening to that, we don't even have to come anymore.
Just put a computer on the stage.
Believe me, when it comes to life, it's a whole lot different.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm being facetious. They're really fun. We're having a good time putting them all together, and it's always a challenge to take on four new pieces at once.
Yeah. That's unusual then, I guess, to do that in one concert.
Not so much for us, but it's certainly unusual for most groups.
I see. So the focus of Del Sol is to play new music.
We do a lot of work with living composers and unusual collaborations. So
yeah,
that's kind of our specialty.
Mark, Jerry, have you had the chance to hear Del Sol rehearse your pieces yet?
No.
That's all. That's
That'll
all
be exciting.
Starting tomorrow and Wednesday.
I hear a rehearsal on Wednesday. So
yes. Charlton, how are the rehearsals going?
I think very well. One of the beauties of working with living composers is the fact that we can call them and email them and pepper them with lots of questions, which is something you can't do with a Mozart.
Can't get in touch with Mozart.
Yeah. Yes.
No.
Well, obviously, we don't have a recording of the Del Sol String Quartet playing the pieces at the wedding concert this Wednesday evening. But we do have a clip of the Del Sol String Quartet playing something, and we'll talk about it afterwards with Charlton Lee. This is Libertango by Astor Piazzolla. Charlton, that piece of music is not a new piece of music, the original music by Piazzolla, but the arrangement makes it new, I guess.
The arrangement, yeah, it was done by a good friend of ours and Bay Area violinist, Jeremy Cohen. And he made that particular version for us a few years back, probably about, let's see, oh, it's actually been a while. It's almost 10 years now, I think.
I see. We took it from the 2002 album Tear.
There we go. Okay, right.
And more recently, from your 2008 album, Ring of Fire, we're talking about the Del Sol String Quartet. Here's, and correct me if I pronounce it wrongly, Chasqui from Leyendas.
That's right. Chasqui okay. from Leyendas, which is actually a part of a larger work by Gabriela Elena Frank, who is a Berkeley-based composer. And her influences are from the Andes, Peru and Bolivia, where her mother is from that region. And she spent a lot of time down there doing sort of musicological research, going from village to village, making recordings, digging through archives, trying to find out a lot about the indigenous music and the folk music of the region. And in this particular piece, the Chasqui is the name of the ancient Incan messengers. Obviously, they didn't have cell phones back then, so if you wanted to invite your friends over for a party, you had to send one of these Chasquis up and over these mountains to invite your friends.
Okay, let's listen to some of it. Chasqui from Leyendas, performed by the Del Sol String Quartet. Mark Vance, Jerry Grant, excited to hear the Del Sol String Quartet, an internationally renowned ensemble playing your music this week.
Absolutely, and you know, and the thing about what they're doing is they're focusing on music which has pulse and rhythm, and maybe you heard from my clip. I love to do music that has pulse. Like it's kind of my jazz chop showing through. So I'm really looking forward to having them dig into my piece, too.
And Mark?
Oh, it's just great to have a ensemble of their quality. Wonderful players play together so well, and that opportunity is fabulous.
And by the way, there are two other pieces on the program on Wednesday. Passages, a new piece by Randy McKean, and a 1954 piece, String Quartet No. 1 by William J. Seideman. All members of the Nevada County Composers Cooperative. Their annual new music concert called Wet Ink this year features the Del Sol String Quartet. It happens at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday, June 10th at Nevada County Fairgrounds. In our studio, Mark Vance and Jerry Grant, composers, members of the cooperative, on the phone, Charlton Lee, violist in the Del Sol String Quartet. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Nice to be here.
And that's Insight for today. I'm Jeffrey Callison. For more on the guests and topics you hear on Insight, go to our webpage, capradio.org/insight. Today's associate producers were Lynn Weaver, Kelly Menemeyer, Rebecca Markison, and Nathan Wilkinson. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. Insight's senior producer is Jen Picard. Thank you for joining us. At Insight, we have one goal.
That's an interesting... I've never been asked that question before.
Good.
Very good question.
That is such a good question.
To get the answers you want to hear.
That is such a great question.
That's a really good question.
From scientists, lawmakers, artists, interesting people of every stripe.
Well, you have really uncorked Pandora's box with that with that question.
I'm Jeffrey Callison. Join me for Insight.
Tomorrow morning at 10 on Capital Public Radio.